No, you do the pledge.
You can turn it over to him when he gets here.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, excuse absences.
Elwanger?
Here.
Kozlowski?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Newton?
Here.
Place? Ross? St. Dennis?
Here.
As Pat mentioned, Jeff indicated he was in the ski game. He was going to try to make it, but the excuse him if he didn't make it.
Okay.
Can I make a motion?
I'll second that. So that'll take care of our excuse absences.
Need a vote.
Vote.
All in favor, say aye.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Okay. Consent agenda.
St. Dennis?
Aye.
Elwanger?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
Yes.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Newton?
Yep.
Place?
Abstain.
Oh, I'll vote for myself.
Yeah, there you go.
I can't break a tie.
I can't break a tie. Maybe we need a vice chair. I was going to nominate Jeff.
Well, go right ahead.
My only... Yep, go ahead.
I'll second the nomination of Jeff Ross as... Vice chair?
Vice chair. Is there any other nominations?
Well, we've got a motion in a second, so it'll be roll call.
Right. Roll call. Well, if there were any other nominations, then we could go into any further discussion. Yeah. Any other discussion? Roll call, Pat?
Needhammer?
Yes.
Newton?
Yep.
Place?
Yes.
St. Dennis?
Yes.
Elwanger?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
Yes.
And we typically also elect a secretary.
Who was the secretary?
George.
I nominate George.
You know, this fall I'm going to.
I'll second that.
Sometime this fall I'm going to.
Yeah, but you're not going yet.
How am I going to?
It's a long ways.
Summer
nights all year up here.
Yeah.
We're going to do this for 2 years.
There's a nomination. The There was a second?
Mm-hmm.
Roll call, Pat.
Kozlowski.
Yes.
Needhammer.
Yes.
Newton.
Yep.
Place.
Yes.
St. Dennis.
Yes.
Elwinger.
Yes.
Well,
I should say no.
All right, and then so we have our secretary, chair, vice chair. I don't believe that there's any more.
No,
that's it. Anything. Okay.
No, no, treasurer,
sure.
There's no money.
There's no money. There is no money. All right, move on to B, recommendations for planning commission appointments.
We have three folks that have submitted applications. Skylar, Adam, who was at the last meeting, and Mr. Shu, for two vacant positions. I did extend invitations to everybody to come. Adam had a prearranged trip, and so he could not make it tonight. So with that, this is a recommendation by this commission to the city commission for appointment to those vacancies. One is Ken Allen's term, that basically he did not want to be reappointed, so it's a full 3-year term. And then Ken, Jason, resigned his position for a new job, and I believe his is done in 2020.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
What is the current status of who's currently on the board when their time runs out? Could I ask that, or do you have that information?
I don't have it with me. I'm sorry. Might be on the back of your book, Scott, if you've got the membership listing in it. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I guess from our previous meetings, Skylar and Adam and Rose were the three that we discussed and basically interviewed, and Rose filled one seat. I think just by the right thing to do is that we would honor the second and third selection recommendation by this committee, and that would be Adam and Skylar fill the next two seats. I think we have a seat in the wings for Larry, and I think all three of them are going to be assets to our committee. It really turns us over to a pretty new committee, and with that, we can talk about that later, but
okay.
Does anybody else, I'd like others to weigh in on that.
Another aspect of the discussion too is we have what is a full position in the voluntary, and then one that's an effective, quite a bit shorter of a role.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder in part with that too, if that's something we should discuss with our officials here. I mean, that's a huge difference of commitment too. But I think that's just something mm-hmm. worthy of conversation. And I might disagree that just because we had three individual mm-hmm. applicants, I think with the new one, they should go and be presented and represented just in the same way. Just because we have previous ones, I think that does make them, more eligible or what have you.
The planning bylaws and the State Enabling Act do provide some guidelines for membership. And it does try to pull upon a variety of skill sets. So that may be something the Planning Commission would like to look at in regard to looking at prospective members, see if there's an area that isn't represented currently, and maybe perhaps get someone that would fill that void. So just because someone's been in line for a period doesn't mean that you need to have any obligation to that person. You're looking at, what's the best mix for this planning commission. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And was Adam interested?
Yes, he was. I spoke with him last week, and he regretted he wasn't going to be able to make the meeting, but he was still interested.
Well, I know that last time I spoke with you, you hadn't had a chance to talk with him yet.
Right.
So
and he got a hold of me, and he did indicate he was still interested.
Okay. All right.
Aaron, what is a DMA under Mr. Adam? Gaylord DMA. What does that mean? Doctor.
I'm not sure. wonder if there's a typo when he meant the DDA, the downtown district, with his role.
In my eyes, you don't see quite as well. Could be DDA.
I don't know what else it would be.
Could be.
You've been here a couple of times now.
Yes.
And participated. And I'm really, I mean, he has a lot of experience that I'd like to see him as well. You were in the Plymouth Planning Commission.
Yes.
That must have been fun.
It was before Plymouth really took off.
Okay.
The 90s, it was still a little bit less contentious than it is now. Now it's just absolutely nuts. You're getting Bigfoot houses.
I remember specifically submitting designs for signs to go in Plymouth, and they had to have color samples of what the sign was going to be before the permit was going to be issued. And I thought that was a little bit over the top.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just, I was out there for master planning, and some of the parking ordinance is very interesting, actually. We got rid of the parking ordinance because we thought there was adequate parking. And needless to say, parking is now an issue in that town because things just took off. Mm-hmm. So.
I don't know what the precedence is on this whole thing. Larry brings with him a lot of experience and a lot of credentials, and I'm very much in support of Larry. I would nominate him, but if we have to follow a procedure.
No, we don't. No, okay. You can nominate him.
Yeah. Well, I would like to nominate him, I guess, if this was a time to do it.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't really set down how this works.
Broad spectrum. That's what Scott was saying, correct?
Well, one, you have the planning bylaws that kind of identify, and then you also have the policy that you adopted in April of 2017, which basically says this: upon the expiration of term of a city planning commission member and the member wishes to continue membership on the commission, that city member will automatically be considered for reappointment at the meeting prior to the expiration of their term, refill the position. At their discretion, the planning commission may consider and recommend any other eligible candidates to fill that vacancy. Vacancy of term. Upon vacancy by any means other than expiration of term, the recommendation of appointment to the planning commission shall be included as a new business item. And on the next available agenda, the planning commission shall be presented with all the candidates that have completed the Boyne City Board application and have indicated the planning commission has an area of interest on the form. The planning commission will only consider applicants that meet the eligibility requirements as stipulated in section 2257A12. That's a residency requirement. All potential candidates will be contacted prior to the meeting and confirm continued interest in the appointment and invited to the meeting, which they may consider for recommendation for appointment. At the meeting, all applicants in attendance will be provided an opportunity to make a presentation to the planning commission. In the consideration of a recommendation to fill a vacancy, the term of the planning commission shall use the membership criteria as listed in section 2A1 and 2 of the planning commission bylaws as a guide. A motion to recommend appointment to fill only the current vacant positions should be made. Recommendation by the planning commission is advisory only and has no legal force or effect. Neither the city commission nor the planning commission is bound by any way by any current or previous recommendations for appointments. The recommendation for the appointment made by the planning commission and the applications of all other eligible applicants considered by the planning commission will be submitted to the next available city commission with a review and recommendation for consideration.
Well, Larry, is there some? Did you like to?
Presentation, well, I've...
We had to do that, so.
Yeah, I like that. Let's see, I've owned a house here in Boyne City for 16 years, been a full-time resident for just over 1 year. So I was kind of the affectionately called trunk slammer. Going back and forth to downstate pretty much every other weekend until retirement, which I started spending a lot more time here. Now I decided to retire up to, you know, a couple of years ago, decided to retire up here in Boyne City and really enjoy it. Boyne City's got a lot going for it with the lake and the downtown. It's quite similar in one of the many ways of a residential community with a older downtown. And that tries to exceed its boundaries, and there are attempts to exceed it, can exceed it at times, but different zoning districts that using as buffers, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very interesting similarity.
So you spend your winters here?
Yeah.
Mr. Retiree?
Yeah.
You've been through one winter.
I've been through more than that.
But that's play.
What's that?
That was play when you were trying to trunk
slam. We stayed all this winter, got season passes at Boyne, so yeah. Enjoyed all the skiing, spent the month of April down in Florida. Month.
What was your career?
Structural engineer, working for architectural companies or architectural firms or a consultant to architectural firms. So full service, commercial, residential type buildings. So it's, yeah, primarily commercial, though, commercial institutional, working with mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, civil landscapers. So I understand the whole ball of wax to some degree. So, okay. So it was 6 years under the Plymouth Planning Commission, which two of them were as chairman. So enjoy that. It's, you know, meetings start a little bit later at 7. The goal was always to be out the same day as we start. So a few times did some rather contentious things. Very, very interesting.
Well, there's been a recommendation.
I'll still have my recommendation for Larry.
Recommendation and a second. Roll call, Pat.
Helmwinger?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
Yes.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Newton?
Yes.
Place?
Yes.
St. Dennis?
Yes.
Thank you. I'd also like to make a recommendation of Skylar. I think that getting some younger, new blood in here gets you started early.
I've been invited on the design board too, so hopefully I'll start doing that.
Fantastic.
So that'll be another thing on the docket for me.
Absolutely.
So,
no, that's a really good crossover.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. I did that for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would second Skyler for our vacancy. Also, in kind of the understanding of 3 meetings ago that we had, I know while I definitely respect Adam's background in education that he brings with him, I know he's been very loud and emotional. There's one of the meetings that I'm concerned about how that would go with our other stressful meetings in the future. And with that, I would wholeheartedly recommend Skyler in that position.
Any other discussion?
I think you should identify which term for who you
pass
to.
I
thought,
you just make that part of your recommendation.
I'm going to make that as part of the recommendation.
To fill a vacancy?
Or to fill again?
Ultimately, the city commission can do whatever they want.
Exactly.
But
I would make a recommendation. I would make a recommendation for Ken's spot for Skyler.
Okay.
Is that the longer one?
That's the one. Yeah, that's full term.
But like we said, if the term fall, I mean, if the term ends up, you have an option to say, yes, I'll continue.
Right.
Yeah. Have we ever kicked anybody out?
No, not in that sense. And when you come up with
Roll call. Absolutely.
I was supportive, was it 3 months ago, of Adam from the standpoint that he went through the process, such as, same as you did,
yep.
as going through the design committee, chairing the design committee, and moving forward from there. I agree that he did display some passion, which was probably out of line. Well, it was out of line. He did not speak through the chair. I guess I'm not going to hold that against him. Mm-hmm. And Skylar is a friend and an ex-student and a local guy with, he can bring a lot to the table. I don't think we can lose. I just respect the fact that Adam is very active in Gaylord. He understands what is the DDA, the chamber, and but the main, and Rotary Chamber, DDA, and most importantly, the design committee. So I would, I'd probably support Adam over Skylar. With that being said, I don't think it mattered much because I think we have some commissioners that might want to move on, and we have a place for whoever is not nominated tonight. So,
I mean, would it make sense for me to wait since you already have two in there? I mean, it's not a problem.
He's completing someone's term.
Yeah.
Term that ends in 2020.
Correct.
All right. Any other discussion?
Roll call, Pat, on the recommendation in a second.
Newton?
Yep.
Place?
Yes.
St. Denis? Yes. Hellwanger?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
Yes.
Needhammer?
No.
Okay. All those recommendations will be submitted to the city commission at their next scheduled agenda. And I'm sure you can get the scissors from there. And everyone, welcome to come to that meeting. Okay, next week?
Yes. And it's a noon meeting.
You're encouraged to come, but it's not required.
Is that Monday?
It's Tuesday.
It's always
the fourth Tuesday of the month.
Fourth Tuesday.
And it'll be at noon.
Thank you, guys.
Could somebody put me in touch with the design board? I mean, how can I get a hold of somebody?
If you can meet me after the meeting,
okay.
I'll go ahead and I'll give you the right people to get with it.
Patrick Kilkenny, assistant planner, there's a staff.
Oh, yeah, and that's probably the best.
Yeah, go talk to Patrick.
Okay.
He can give you updated on your meetings and the processes.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to C, review city goals, high priority action item. Review zoning ordinances, management plan with intention of eliminating unnecessary barriers to provide new housing options, especially for families and workers.
I provided you with the adopted goals of the city commission. In there you'll see there's a number of items that the planning is involved with, and specifically one of those was housing and how can we look at the master plan and the zoning ordinance and maybe remove any barriers to housing. So I kind of did a cursory review of the ordinance and just put down some thoughts that I had. The planning commission can decide that none of these are good ideas or all of them are good ideas or come up with something you want, but I thought it was just to get the discussion started. So I went through chapter by chapter and looked at some of these things. Beginning with the rural estate district, In that district, currently only single-family dwellings are allowed. Something that could be looked at is maybe accessory dwellings or increased density, maybe allowing duplexes or something of that nature. There's the thing that the district regulations as they're written, so what do you think?
My first question, I don't have an answer for it, and I was hoping you could handle it. In any neighborhood, and I got a feeling we're going to run into this again about duplexes. How plus or minus do they affect neighboring property values?
I have not seen any.
Because I got a feeling we're going to run into that some of these.
You hear a lot of anecdotal stuff. You hear a lot of anecdotal things that, oh, this affects my property value. I have not seen any studies that show that there is a negative impact from duplexes in a neighborhood, but there's always that claim. We have a number of them throughout town now in the TRD district.
Right.
And, I haven't seen any value impact of those on neighboring houses.
Are any of them more than duplexes? Are they?
Well, throughout the city, there are a few scattered multifamily non-conforming in the TRD district. They're mixed in a variety of neighborhoods. So I guess they're out there again. So in the rural estate district, the intent is a little larger lots, a little lower density. So that's the push. If you're looking to increase density in that, that's not really what the rural estate district's all about. But and one of the things I did mention was the accessory dwellings. Those are allowed pretty much in a lot of the other districts, but not the rural estate district. And that is a way someone can, perhaps build a mother-in-law apartment or, increase housing, that kind of thing.
Okay.
In reality, I don't see a lot of permits for those. A lot of people don't request to do those. I don't know what demand is. There is a tax implication if people do develop accessory dwelling unit. They rent it out, all of a sudden it takes a hit on your homestead exemption. It's a percentage breakdown, so you're looking at a tax liability for developing this, and that may be a hindrance to some people. And that's a whole different barrier that we really don't have any impact on. And there may be some initiatives to do that through the state and other avenues, but right now that's nothing that we can control.
For the purposes of this, what is our current usable definition for an accessory dwelling? Is that just something you can obtain an occupancy permit on? Water?
Accessory dwelling can take the form of a variety of things. It can be a detached structure independent of the home, the primary dwelling. It could be part of the primary dwelling. It could be like above a garage. So it is, there's no real limitation on how that is developed. Basically, it's some other independent dwelling unit accessory to the primary on that same lot.
Okay.
So there's no size requirements, but it just has to have those three elements that make a dwelling, a bedroom, bathroom, kitchen. And then that's going to be a dwelling.
And then this is just a suggestion of extending it to the TRD district?
No, this would be the REB.
REB.
It's already allowed in the TRD.
There it
has a special use.
Okay.
And we'll have that discussion in a minute.
And it still has to meet setbacks if it's an independent building. And it still has to, there's a limit on the size. It can't be bigger than the first structure, is that correct?
Well, you have lot coverage restrictions that look at the lot as a whole and how much you can build on it. So if you have a very large dwelling on there already, you may be limited to that. And then there is no limitation information on the square footage of an accessory dwelling unit. In theory, it could be larger than the primary dwelling. I doubt that would happen, but it could happen.
Is it minimums though?
No.
Because it's pre-open definition.
Pre-open, and like I said, it's, you know, a lot of people talk about it, but from a practical standpoint, I don't see a lot of people doing it. I just, if they do it, they'd probably do it, you know, under the radar. But for a permitting process, I don't see a lot of people doing it.
So what's the intent, to find every nook and cranny and stick something in it? Is that the goal here?
No, the goal is, as stipulated by the city commission, is to look at potential barriers. So what we're trying to do is find them barriers. And if you don't think this is a barrier, we won't pursue it any further.
Is it okay to ask a question from the audience?
We're,
Mr. Chairman. Okay, you probably haven't opened it for public comment.
I haven't opened it for public comment yet. It's pretty informal here tonight, but do you want to go through all of these, or I'm just curious?
I was given a charge by the city commission, and that's what I'm doing.
All right. Let's go through these, and we'll try and go through them quickly, and then if you have some concept or some ideas, that would definitely be awesome. Okay, I understand where that is going. Does anyone have any questions about this suggestion?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of pursuing it because it is taking away a barrier. As Scott said, it may not really be a barrier because it may not be a concept that most people want to attempt. I think before this commission was receptive to neighbors' feelings that, okay, I don't want my neighbor to build another structure in the backyard and crowd my privacy in my single family home. However, we all know that housing is the huge issue, and that's why we're addressing this. So I'm in favor. I don't think that it's going to, in theory, impose upon the neighborhood feeling.
One thing that I noticed is, you know, the housing, there is an availability of lots and things to build, but you don't see anybody building new homes. They're looking for what's existing and what can the city provide to have affordable housing, but you haven't hit that nail on the head yet. Who can afford this affordable housing and where does it come from?
Well, that's the thing, the city can't provide housing.
I understand that.
All we can do is provide
means,
yeah, the means to accomplish that.
Sure.
So,
and I agree with that, but making things smaller, tighter, forcing it in.
Well,
I don't know. That's.
I think you hit it. No one's building, and what? Why aren't they building?
Right.
Cost of construction, and how can this body in the city impact the cost of construction? You can basically do it in two ways. You can increase density or decrease the minimum buildable area. Mm-hmm. So. Those are ways you can impact or process.
But I think there is some options out there for small homes, and nobody's doing that either, that I can see. There are smaller lots available, have been available, and they're just not turning over. So what are some of the issues there?
Well, no one's made any application to me for a small home, so I guess I don't see it. I still think the cost is the biggest barrier.
That's not part of this agenda this evening.
It's not?
No, we're just trying to figure out what things could be, what hindrances could be put in the way of people building.
If I could build an accessory dwelling on my lot for my adult parents or adult children or whatever, Jim, I can reduce the cost because I'm not paying for a lot. I can tap into my water and sewer and electric. I'm not paying for that. I can tap and I can build. You know, right there is the the reason why we would address this, because we are making an attempt as a city to ease regulations so the costs go down.
And can I understand where they're coming from and trying to do some things? Like Scott indicates, some of it's being done undercover that you don't even know about. And people are indeed doing that. So is it indeed reducing the need for homes, or like you say, maybe your parents, something like that? Are you seeing applications for that? Or are they doing it to rent it out to make money?
I can count on one hand how many people have applied for accessory dwelling units in the 15 years I've been here. So it's not really a popular thing or something that people intend to do.
Speaking of my current real estate experience, I just showed a home here this weekend in Boise City that had what was originally a garage replaced as an accessory dwelling. And it was considered a more valuable property to potential buyers having that. So I mean, I think that there's a value in that as well as we have this influx of new residents. So I mean, whether they got their permit or not, it was something that was deemed
They'll find out when the bank tries to keep them home.
Just speaking of my experience from that, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
One thing Jim's brought up about the small house, and we did grant Ted Maxey in his proposal out there, smaller square feet.
Right,
that never materialized. We have been cooperating letting that.
That was an amendment that was made specifically for the multi-family district where you have single-family residences allowed in that district. They're allowed to have lower minimum square footages and lower lot sizes. And that was an attempt to make it more economical to build out there. And he still hasn't been able to come up with a plan.
I haven't heard any more on that progress.
He got an extension from the city commission for another year. Okay. And that commission is going to further explore ways to make the project work. Right. So, I guess, am I hearing any proposed changes for the RED district?
If you're not getting a lot of call for it, I don't see a reason to. I don't think this is going to change it that much. Okay. That's my thought.
No, I agree with you.
I think there's some other things that we could do that would change it dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in that district, do you have ideas?
Not in that district.
Okay. All right, in the TRD district, single family by right, accessory duplex by conditional use, currently all to 512 roof pitch, required potential amendments allow accessory dwellings and duplex units by right, fourplex units by conditional use, eliminate roof pitch requirements. Again, I'm not saying these are good ideas or bad ideas, they're just potential.
Yeah, I really, the 512 pitch requirement was brought in to kind of, from what I understood, to reduce the amount of prefab homes that were being built
right.
in the city.
And that was, I believe, the impetus for that. There was some of the lower cost kind of units being put in. They bought a lot and put in, and folks didn't like the look of those, so they put this pitch in there to at least change that aspect.
I think it really, I mean, it's a design aspect that Boise City has that I think, which they should stay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And architecturally, snowmobiling, that probably helps that out.
Well, they still have to be building codes.
Well, no, but the 512 pitch.
Well, again,
it's
no, we have to be building codes, so that's nothing that we have any control over.
All right.
So, scratch that. Currently, the accessory dwelling units and duplexes are conditional use, and as we touched on earlier, sometimes that basically comes down to how concerned are the neighbors about it. To me, that's not a valid reason to approve or deny. You need more of a systematic way to look at these, and I don't see one in the ordinance now.
So basically, it's a subjective kind of thing, and how you feel about a particular person and their particular neighbors, which to me is not a real good way to determine it. So.
You still have the 250 or 300 foot rule between new houses?
No, that's not a rule. Basically, what, as part of the application process, the applicant is told to provide all existing duplexes within 300 feet, which to me is not a good way to, you don't want people out there doing inventories for you.
Right.
That should be what the city does.
Right.
So, and then what the planning commission does with that information. There's no limits saying that if there's 7 or 10 or 30,
yeah,
it's basically subjective what you think is too many or too few. And you make that decision. It doesn't say if there's more than 4 that you can't approve. It doesn't say anything like that. So it still comes down to
what side of the bed we got off
of. Exactly.
That's it.
So, you know, without a, you know, conditional uses in my mind, they need to have a specific criteria to evaluate those. And you know, if you don't have that spelled out, it really doesn't lead to good decision making.
Well, I think you know our standing. I would be in favor.
Right. And we had this discussion before.
Yeah, not going through the conditional use process, just an allowed process. And again, Jane McKenzie in Northern Homes is actually pursuing some duplexes. And the whole idea is, you know, back to affordability and cost. If you live one half and rent the other half, certainly helps on your mortgage payment, and it's a new way to address the problem of cost.
My mom rents out her room.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the new thing.
All right. So yeah, that's one of the tools. The process is also an impact that we can have. We can make that process easier.
Okay. Is it something that we would like to pursue?
You got 2 years at this and that's the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Consensus to make accessory dwelling units, duplexes, as a use by right in the TRD. I also threw out there fourplexes as a condition of use. That would be increasing the density. So
we would be looking at our conditional parameters of. So we're extremely vague?
Yes, that would be a part of that.
Yeah. Part of that, yeah.
Okay. If you want to do that.
Yes. Yeah. I think everybody's before us. I would like to pursue it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
And WRD, only single family dwellings currently allowed, and it also has that 5-12 roof pitch requirement. So I proposed allowing accessory dwellings with duplexes in that district. But again, I don't know if you want to introduce something that's not there already into the waterfront residential district.
Right. Such a small area.
Yes.
It's a pretty small.
Yeah.
Can you explain where that district is, waterfront residential? It's not very big. Bay Street.
So right along here is the waterfront residential district, all that blue there. And then down here along Bay Shore. So just those two areas.
Is that single family or is that?
Primarily single family.
Okay.
Higher end homes, typically.
So, past the land is. I was going to say the limit.
So, Mr. Chairman.
And in this area, I think you probably have the propensity more for people developing these for short term.
I think in those given districts, there's not a lot of inhibition to, you know, the housing crisis. I think that would probably deteriorate some of the view and value to our waterfront, seeing higher density construction. I think a lot of those waterfront homes there, speaking to real estate, you know, the water view that you can get, that's going to be rentals, family that want to come up, and I think it would just expound building construction and density on that waterfront view. I think that would hurt Boise City. I do. Yeah, hard no on that one. Hard pass. Hard pass.
Yeah, I can see any. Okay. And then the multi-family district. So there, right now you have a maximum of 10 units per acre, 40% open space requirement. There is no undeveloped MFRD land except that was conditionally zoned for Mr. Maxey. And that if that project can't happen, that will revert back to the original zoning district. So some of the things you can do is increase the density, reduce the open space, zone additional land. The one challenge with zoning additional land, MFRD, you almost have to have water and sewer, and you really don't have any sizable parcels that have water and sewer available that would be suitable for that kind of development. I think Mr. Max's piece is really the primary one that's out there right now.
How much time does he have on his...
He was gave an extension for a year in April, so next April.
Yeah, I guess if all of that is already developed, would there be a lot of... Could you see some property and some of those zoning districts that could possibly expand? I mean, obviously, if you reduce the open space, there would be more available area, but... The places that I'm thinking of, I don't think that's really going to be...
Right. You almost have to think outside the city limits and start thinking about how neighboring townships could help and then extension of facilities into those, and how would that be paid for? And the city's not going to extend water or sewer for developments. Those costs are going to be incurred by whoever.
Yeah,
does the development. So that may be as a barrier. Yep. So how can we overcome that? I'm sure.
What if we expand the business park to include residential, because we already have water and sewer?
We haven't got to the P&E district.
It's
on the list.
So does anyone have any comments about the MFRD district and circulation?
I guess my only thought is, if Mr. Maxey can't make his project fly, to consider permanently zoning that the multifamily out there and just make that change.
It's kind of the last big property to do that.
And we can, come to that, next April, but I think this is something to think about. Maybe that's something that we consider.
And somebody will be coming back for conditional use. Okay. Is it something they can revisit?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So you're comfortable with the density of 10 units per acre? So multifamily, that's not really that, so I don't know.
I think it's fine the way it is.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, the manufactured housing district. There is only one district in town for that. And as this planning commission talked with Ms. Johnson last month, they're planning to expand, and that'll probably be built out to all their available land once they do that. So, are there other areas? But I think you have the same kind of challenge is with the multifamily is where's the
suitable size piece of land that could accommodate that kind of use, that has available streets and infrastructure, water, sewer, that kind of stuff.
The area towards North Boyne, what was that zone that has?
Right here?
Yeah.
That's in the city owned property?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the CSD district, the community service district.
Okay.
So if that is...
It would have to be rezoned.
Yeah, yeah. So they are looking at selling that and then probably rezoning that to either multifamily or single family.
Okay.
That's kind of near the dog park and the community garden.
I know the primary interest of party was the school, and they were looking at single family units on it, so I think TRD would be the logical choice there.
Weren't the apartments further down looking at the other piece?
Yeah, that piece right here.
Yeah.
That's already zoned multifamily. It's
okay.
Right there. So, you know, the city would have to sell it to them, and then they have to develop for some kind of multifamily use.
Okay.
But
we're talking about the MH.
Right, the mobile home. Manufactured housing.
Manufactured house.
You know, and those have changed significantly since, you know, a lot of ordinances written back in the 70s and 80s singled out mobile homes and said you couldn't build them in certain areas, which was unconstitutional, and you can't discriminate against housing that way. Mm-hmm. But they changed a lot in their quality and their appearance, and you know, they are attractive because they are, you know, economic. Mm-hmm. So.
They still don't have front doors facing the streets, right?
Well,
what are the criteria that we have for something?
There is.
The trailer, not trailer homes, but some of the ones.
Well, if you're looking at.
They came up to game in their trucks.
Right, right. If they would put that in a residential district, then there are that design criteria that they have to meet. But in a manufactured housing district, that doesn't have those kinds of criteria.
One concept that Ted's looking at is that type of home on his 30 acres, but including a front porch and a garage and the front door off the front porch. So, I mean, as Scott said, they've come a long way, Joe.
Okay.
Well, our neighbor, two neighbors down, I mean, just came in on a truck and a crane and.
So, is there any, does anyone have any question about as the max, is 5,500 square foot the maximum or minimum?
Well, that's the minimum square footage for a lot.
For a lot, correct.
Which is pretty much the same size as a TRD lot.
Yeah, sure.
So you're not really gaining much by not getting anything.
Okay. And then the open space requirement.
Right.
If we're looking at reducing that.
Right. You know, provide more area to build. You know, using Lakeview Village as an example, you know, they have something of an open area now. Basketball open. You know, I rarely see, you know, kids playing there or riding around there. It's more of an older community, but and that's just it. You know, there may be others that, you know, have more children and whatnot, but so is there really a need for that much area dedicated to open space? Especially in this environment where we have, you know, probably 4,000 acres of parkland surrounding the city, and we have a lake across the street for pretty much everybody, and we need to dedicate that much open space in that community for that use, and it could be better used for housing because the amenities are already out there in the community.
Now, is this, and for that district, is it just a flat 25?
Well, there's...
Or is it actually a percentage, and then that's what it comes out to?
No, it's 25,000 square feet. Says. And but what that comprised of is not really well defined.
Okay.
I think it says contiguous.
contiguous, or, you know, so it has to be one big space in some way, but...
No, part of that would be parking or any type of that?
No.
That's excluded from that?
No, you can't use your road as open space.
Not a road.
A median or anything like that, yeah.
Well, I would be in favor of reducing that open space language and cleaning up the language.
Make it easier to understand.
Yeah. You said the requirement, how do you define open space is not well defined? Well, first of all, it's eliminated.
Right, and the state, you know, this is a layered jurisdiction where the city has requirements for this district, and then the state also does. Yeah. So they have to go through that process. And this is a much higher than the state requirement, so, you know, maybe we need to...
What is the state requirement?
I think like 5,000 or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, it's significantly less. It's not as big.
Is it true that it's even close to 5,500? Or is it created, or is this long before this was written?
This ordinance was developed in 2001, and that was in place since the 70s.
Or not, so that's the year, it's 5,500 square foot.
No, it's not, but, right. And I think you have a great example of how well it works.
Yeah, I consider it pretty, compared to some places. So, more room is up. But, you know, at 5,500 square feet, I was going to say a lot, as you said.
Yeah.
You know, so they're even close to 5,500 square feet, and that's what seems to be working.
Mm-hmm. I'd be willing to consider lowering the open space requirement.
I'd like to see a better definition of exactly what it is.
But the open space requirement, I mean, yeah, open space is in multiple districts that it's brought up.
Right.
And is it being able to see your feet and see the sky? Is it?
Right. It's just with a better definition, it's easier to reduce than just guessing that, yeah, well, let's do it, and it doesn't work for whatever.
So, are we kind of in agreement on looking at
pursuing it further?
Pursuing it further, but then also clearly find a clear definition of open space.
And the lot area?
If it's working, I don't...
Well, no, this no, the lots, not. The existing lots are probably not 5,500 square feet.
Oh, I see.
Right.
I'd be willing to take a look and see, and become more in line with what's already there. It seems to be working. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got about 3,000 square feet and almost so.
Okay.
Professional office district, single family units currently are allowed. So, in that district, you could consider allowed mixed use or accessory dwelling units. That's the professional office district. There's just the one area of that. Right across the street from Old City Park.
River Street. We talked about State Street in that district, but we never made it.
I don't see it as being a
barrier.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of them in that use currently?
In that district?
Yes. The single family and the professional office.
Yeah. I mean, that's a house. Most of them are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
But in long-term plan, we thought that would be a good block to...
Right,
the
right.
House changed into office.
Yeah, and, you know, you... So single families are allowed, okay? So do you want to expand on that to allow
allow like a mixed use where you could have, you know, your office on the first floor and residential above, kind of like in CBD where that's allowed.
I think offering that flexibility is a great idea.
Yeah, makes sense.
Especially in that district, there's a lot of open space and double lots.
And big old houses that would.
So mixed uses.
Mixed uses.
All of our cars.
There's no, yeah, don't miss the park. We'll have to address that. Yeah. Turn the woodshop over.
It's all park run. All spaces.
Bring your car.
I know. So look into the mixed use for that district. Yeah.
All right. Okay, the waterfront marina district. The mixed use is a conditional use in that district. Let's see, we only have one waterfront marina district, and that is where the open space is and where Honeywell is.
So is that one.
Yeah, I really, and I don't see any other land being zoned that. So, to change that particular district, I don't think you're really doing anything. So,
move on to the CBD.
CBD. Okay. Mixed uses, apartments up to 8 units with setbacks, single family dwellings with setbacks allowed. Potential mixed use on the ground floor units, residential units. Increase the parking units, eliminate setbacks, allow accessory dwelling units. One of the things that apartments up to 8 units are allowed, but you have to build it with setbacks, which always seemed counter to me. If you're trying to make a building fit in to the central business district, you're, and if it ever transitions to anything else, then it's already, it's kind of CD. So to me, you know, the setbacks are kind of counterproductive to what you're trying to do to that downtown district.
Because for anything else, you don't have setbacks.
Right, right. So, you know, if you're building, you know, an apartment in the downtown district, okay, you got to do something totally different. And it'll look out of place to what your downtown is. And, you know, we have a lot of design criteria, what we're trying to get the buildings to look like, and then you throw these in there, that may, you know, make it look totally different. So, and then, you know, have a mixed use, allow ground floor units. You know, that's becoming more common in some downtowns. And, you know, in talking with some developers, it is a barrier.
Yeah, the setback is a barrier?
No. Well, the setback is, and also to have no allowance for any ground floor units or any units that are below, you know, the commercial activity.
And that's been something I've been kind of confused about. My husband and I are building one on the main floor that we got approval from the city.
Right.
So.
Well, that's an existing building.
As an existing building.
Yeah, so this would be a new build.
Okay.
Where you'd be required to do that. Mm-hmm.
What the developers from Lost Lake Street expressed was that the bottom floor, the ground floor facing Lake Street, could be retail, but the backside,
right,
facing
right.
The parking lot. And,
you know, I've seen some ordinances where you know, it provides for that, but still, you know, that area along the main drag would be reserved for commercial, but you still have, you know, residential in there, so. Remove that barrier, you know, would make it more appealing to them, you know, better returns. So.
Could we make it more specific as to residential, but not
yes,
having, it's not having emphasis on the main street?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good.
Write that in.
It's hard to sell office space or retail space on the back side facing.
Yes,
the
parking lot. Right, correct. And there's quite a few.
I can't think of a lot of examples in the CBD where it would make any cohesive sense for an accessory dwelling unit. I mean, that's the only one we're blocking at that would be kind of, yeah, I don't know.
Well, since single-family dwellings are allowed, they allow someone to have one to build one. But...
Yeah, I'd like to see, look into the having the setbacks being the same as if it was a commercial building.
Right.
And then also the mixed use, but also looking at the way it works, that way we don't have a bunch of living on the first floor facing the main roads.
Okay.
Does anyone else have any suggestions to that?
I agree.
Makes sense.
I agree.
Do the downtown development people have an issue with that?
That's why we have public hearings, so they can come from.
Because probably some of the rules came from, they don't want it either.
Oh, yeah.
To have dwellings facing the road and interfering with their businesses.
Well, sure, I would agree, Jim. Want your streetscape to be retail.
Correct.
Continuously, not a house.
Right, interruption in it.
Okay, for the TCD.
Okay, mixed municipal parks, it kind of mimics the CED rules. So same kind of considerations there. So that district is basically right there north of State Street. Right here and right here.
Down the family fair.
Yep. And down there is a general commercial district.
So everything leading up to it.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, it's the same situation with the setbacks.
Yeah, they pretty much mimic each other in those rules right now. So, I would suggest if you do it for one, do it the other.
Where do we call traditional or transitional though? Lower heights,
yes.
Lower setbacks?
Yep. Well, the setbacks are the same, but there's a lower height, so it's a little of a transition.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We're going to move to one. Let's look at the other. I agree.
General commercial district. Residential uses are not permitted in that district, so that's where you have your little more intense retail kind of store, you know, things like family fair, those heavy retail drive-by, passerby users.
What's your recommendation for that?
I don't think residential units are really, they might work sporadically if someone has, a loft or something in an existing retail store, they can rent out, but typically, I don't see a lot of people that help their residential users in the general commercial.
Anyone
else? No. Flexibility, someone wants to, right?
I know, but it would be, if there hasn't really been a thought or a call for it in such a small area, I don't know.
It's there and outside of town.
It's up there by Catholic Church, correct?
Yeah, McDonald's and that area.
Oh, where it's built.
So you may have people renting out these storage units and staying.
Don't joke about that. That's in the future of that.
So you didn't have it. Yeah, I know.
That'd be surprising.
But the church, they might have a unit,
They do have anything
they
heard.
Right. They have
it out. It's
part of the parsonage, but
correct.
They can build an accessory building as part of that. So. But like I don't see that as real, something that'd be really pursued by anybody.
Well, let us know what they do.
All right. In the regional commercial industrial district, that's this lighter purple. Mm-hmm. So residential uses are not allowed in that district. Could you incorporate residential uses in some way for that?
I don't know that you want to.
Are you talking like Van Dam?
CarQuest. CarQuest, Great Lakes Energy.
Right.
There's
got it. Okay.
Carters, and this is the gymnastics up there, and I guess up to Fukuoka. I mean, there's an area. Yeah, there is, but, you know. You got the Solomon on the river. Doesn't it extend over to the Van Dam's?
Right here?
Yeah. It's all our regional commercial industrial, which this is really more of an industrial district, you know, it's pretty intense users. You know, I know Van Dam was talking about when they had that office, to put that on site and have like employee housing there. So we're, I know, maybe that's something. Business could provide housing in some way for people that work at that site.
Yeah, so the only thing I was thinking, because we haven't mentioned that about the old office, as you said, they also mentioned, well, we could even do lofts or apartment size in the new addition for 10 employees that can't find housing.
Yeah.
Apprenticeships.
Yeah, so maybe we could explore that kind of
an
accessory unit for that business. Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that idea, having a workplace accessories.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would that be allowing the industrial, for those folks to build something to house their workers?
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Walloon did it at the end.
What?
Walloon, they did it at the top of or above the restaurant. They ran out all those things to their employees.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're all offices. They had employee housing for the first 2 years.
Yeah, no, that's a really, I like that idea a lot.
I mean, it closes the employer and lack of employees to be out right there on site for any larger employers.
So in the planned industrial district, that's this darker purple here, there's language that allows that you have a caretaker or watchman, you know, if you have a guard shack and you have somebody stay there, but you know that. So here we do have a lot of land and we do have employers that are looking for employees, so maybe there's a way to provide a similar kind of thing and to allow them to develop housing for their employees in some way.
I have an idea. I think that would be just. I
said that for years, but they won't do it.
We'll open it up.
Who showed up for years?
I have.
But I think
that
everywhere, but I do like that.
No, I say they do it everywhere.
They do it
everywhere. You don't need it everywhere here.
No.
Just for folks that they can't get there.
Okay. So look into that.
Okay.
All
right, then in the community service district, that's primarily public properties. Senior housing is allowed in that district, but you know, like pretty much all of that is publicly owned, and I don't see anybody building senior housing that's owns it. So
typically, that type of thing ends up getting rezoned.
Right.
If you do sell it off or any of that.
Right. So you know, in the airport, this open space here, you know, the cemetery.
Did you guys want that?
Those parks, you know, that's all CSD, so I don't see any of that being developed for any kind of price. So yeah, like Aaron said, if any CSD property is sold off, like the potential for this property up here to be sold, that would probably be rezoned.
Right.
So I don't see any changes to that. I don't think it really.
Okay. Open space community option?
The open space community option is probably one of the most convoluted, difficult ordinances I've ever read or tried to administer. And it provides zero incentive for anybody to try and use it. The amount of effort that's going to
take, get a project, develop it under those ordinances, are not worth the time and incentives that are offered by it, which are minimal at best. So people will just do other easier things. I think, you know, as a whole, the whole article is pretty useless. Only one person has used it in my time here, and that was the Harwich Heights development. And you can see that product didn't end up really helping the situation. And I would say it's not a good use of that district or that land. So I would recommend starting from scratch on that and find something that has enough of an incentive where people are going to use it and it develops the product that you want. Exactly what that system when you're home, but
the intention for the open space community option was?
Well, the theory is to preserve open space by giving a density bonus, but there are so many requirements in how you develop that open space, what you can consider open space, how you do that math, and how the bonuses are calculated. They're really limited incentives. I mean, you have, well, the whole article is over 20 pages long. And it took me probably five times to read it before I understood exactly what they were trying to do. And I still don't understand it. But
I just don't remember the intention.
Well, the intention is basically, I think the thought was like a clustering where you can give a density bonus if you move them all together and you lease them open space. And you give enough, you make it, right, you make it attractive enough where they get some bonus to do this or they'll pursue it and leave that other land undeveloped. So, the intent is, okay, we want you to develop this little corner. And you got to go through all these hoops. And if you get one extra unit for doing all this process, well, that's not worth it. They'll just develop a whole piece and divide it up and make it a site condo and be done. Instead of going through this process for 6 months and coming out with something else. So, in theory, it's a good tool, but in practice, this one is not really very well done. So.
Okay, so I would go on your recommendations. So you're looking at rewriting it?
I would rewrite it. I would probably first look out at some other municipalities that have similar kind of language and kind of look at those and bring those back to the commission, see something they're comfortable with, and then pursue that for ours, for our needs.
Yep.
Let's move on to parking requirements.
As we talked about, multi-family requires 1.5 spaces per efficiency and 1.5 spaces per single bedroom units, two bedroom units. In my personal opinion, I think 1.5 is too high for those users, and I think you could reduce that to 1, and you have to be more in line with the real demand. As our parking study and their demand coefficients that they use in their calculations were much less than what we were requiring, and that's in real world circumstances that they figure these out. So I would lean more towards what they require or look at as opposed to what we're requiring. And I think we require way too much. It's just my opinion.
I think that reducing one bedroom down to one space just
I agree. I totally agree. It needs to be in alignment with reality.
Yeah. And, I think forecasting parking demand, looking in the future, people are getting less amounts of cars on average than they did years ago. We have services like Uber, Lyft, and all these other things where people don't need cars. You have the whole, autonomous vehicles now. That is probably going to impact parking. So to me, if I was to forecast, I'd say parking demand is going to increase. that's all I have in regards to the ordinance review. I don't know if there's any additional that any commission members had.
Great. I want to open up to the public to have their comments on those recommendations.
You're so patient.
Okay.
Thank you. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Larry Shute, 414 High Street. I'm getting the sense the idea is to increase overall density of housing within Point City, perhaps, or just increase buildable areas. Is that correct?
Well, the charge from the city commission was to eliminate barriers to housing. So in doing that, I think increasing the density is because, to me, one of the barriers is cost. How can you reduce cost, you increase density, you reduce lot size, you reduce process. So I think those are the avenues that this commission has that can put impact on.
Now, the conditional use allows for planning commission reviews of these, and neighbors would be informed of a meeting?
Yes, conditional use is a public hearing. So anything that requires a conditioned use, you would have a notice within 300 feet of all property owners.
As opposed to by right?
Right.
That by right is just administrative?
Yeah, correct. They still have to meet all the ordinance criteria, but you just don't have that public hearing aspect and review criteria.
I mean, it seems like for a duplex, it may make sense to have a public hearing still.
Okay.
In many, my opinion. Yeah, traditional residential.
I guess my question is always, okay, if you have a public hearing and you have a conditional use, what criteria are you going to be looking at that use to determine whether it should be approved or not?
It'd be the same as any other ordinance, whether or not, the same as the existing ordinance within that area, is that
correct? I guess what a better way to put it is, what is unique about a duplex that makes it rise to that level of a conditional use as opposed to it's a residential use in a residential district? So what's so unique about a duplex that makes it rise to this level of scrutiny?
Interesting point.
The duplex would still have to meet lot coverage.
Oh yeah, there's still all
subject to all those
ordinance standards.
Parking,
40%
and all that.
Right. Yeah. So it has to meet all those standards.
40% coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still has to be put it up, or had,
if you in my neighborhood. I have a lot of rentals. I mean, we don't have any issues. They all look pretty nice, well kept up.
I can see that much more for duplexes than for accessory buildings, so perhaps.
I see that more for
that just by right it follows the zoning rights of duplex. It seems to make more sense for that one, but I don't know about the accessory buildings, whether to allow that by right as opposed to a separate program on the site.
What is it that Charlevoix went to the new concept? It's called form zoning. They don't really care what happens inside. They want to outside.
No, they don't have a true form-based code, but that is the intent behind form-based. It's basically you don't really worry about what's going on inside the building. You care more about what it looks like and how it looks in the community. Because the theory is that it's going to transition over time. You know, those users from one to another, but the building is always going to look the same, so you want to get that right. So that's what the focus is for that.
And the accessory building would definitely be something that's very different from what should be existing if you're adding a whole nother garage type building in it.
Well, there's still design criteria.
True.
For those, yeah.
True.
Okay, can you close that shade?
Sure.
I see just shadows and forms.
And what are the requirements right now for an accessory building? How it looks?
Right, there's the design criteria. criteria for the TRD district that isn't, you know, how it's going to look.
And they have to stick to that.
Yeah. Okay. But it's still, you know, they have how they build it, you know, whether it's inside the primary dwelling, whether it's attached or detached, or the car garage.
Well, and then also there is a maximum or minimum either.
Right. But there is an additional setback encumbrance for accessory dwelling units. They have to be at least 10 feet from a lot line. Where if you have a detached accessory structure like a garage, you can go 3 feet from that. So that would stop people from converting like a garage for...
Yeah, because they wouldn't be able to.
It would meet that setback.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, now, one of the things is open space community option. Could you please highlight a little bit better where that is?
There is no. It's an overlay district.
Okay.
So you could put it, you know, over the RED district or the TRD district or whatever district, and based on that underlying zoning district, that's how you can compute what density bonuses you get. So you start off with that, you know, the basic density for that district, and then you provide so much open space, you may get a bonus, but you have, there's certain areas you can include, there's certain areas you can't include, so it's...
Well, I haven't studied the zoning map all that well, and I hope to get into it much more, but there seems to be, if you, on the outskirts of towns, residential areas that seem to be not necessarily defined, some of those lighter colors.
RED, this, like this here and that here, the rural estate district.
Okay, those are the rural estate.
Yes, yes. The lighter yellow is the rural, the
okay, if dark. If you could continue on down around the lake. Okay.
So basically, you know, you got the TRD kind of in the middle, and as you go out, you get the RED, the rural estate district, and then on the lake shores, you have the water. Waterfront residential district.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't know whether the open space community option would just be rural estate.
No, it can be rural estate. It can be, because this is right here, this Harbridge Heights, that was developed under that ordinance. Mm-hmm. So it has an open space
as a park
overlay. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 houses, and I think there was 40 some lots, and that was in 2006. Mm-hmm. That was developed. So, you know, and some of that may have been, you know, the developer and, you know, the covenants that they put on that specific user, and it also impacted the owners.
But what you're talking about is making it a little bit, make the benefits better, but also make it more streamlined.
Well, something that, you know, if you have ordinances that are never used, I question, you know, what's the point? You have something that can't be used in any way, why even have it? So if the goal is to remove a barrier, is there some tool that we can employ that would be, you know, more applicable and more used? Accommodate the goal of reducing barriers.
I do have a comment in general, and that is a compliment to Scott and staff. Boyne City, I think, has been very receptive and progressive in trying to solve our housing issues. And I think many other communities are far behind us because they're not taking the dedication and time to study this, and we have studied this as a subcommittee, as a planning commission, as a city commission, as a community. I mean, to me it's pretty exciting stuff that we're doing this, because it's not being done everywhere, for sure.
Well, you know, it comes from the goals that the city has set, and this has been a goal for how many planning sessions that we've had over the last 10 years. Yeah. Housing availability has always been top of the list.
We are not sustainable as a community until we solve this housing issue. And really, the loss on Lake Street are a result of us being progressive and that developer coming to us. Ted Maxey, the result of us trying to work with him. The expansion of the manufactured home park, the trailer park, is a result of us being receptive to trying to solve it. So, hands off to Scott.
Did you have any other questions?
Nothing more, sure.
Thank you. Scott, did you have any questions about this?
I'm good.
All right, Scott, kind of your marching orders on that?
Yep.
So are you going to be bringing us to this kind of a thesis? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, I'll start drafting some language and bring it back as I get it developed. But I would like to do any amendment process in one process. So,
I understand.
So you know, we may look at a couple of amendments and get that language set and go around. And then once we get all the possible amendments, we'll move them all through this one.
To the city commission.
The city commission. Then it's, you know, it's a lot cheaper and easier to do that way.
All right. All right, let's move on to staff report.
There will be the second installment of the medical marijuana webinars from MSU in this room on Wednesday at 3 o'clock. It's 3 till 4:30. So I encourage anyone that's interested, it's free, anyone can attend. Please feel free to stop by.
What day is that?
Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
No. Thursday. Thursday, right?
Thursday.
Okay.
What are they going to discuss there? Like rules and regulations?
Well, the first one was basically where we're at with the existing law. I think we're getting closer to the state developing its rules, and then once you see these rules and then municipalities can react to those rules and you decide, you know, if they need to adopt them or not adopt them and take those steps. So.
And we have voted to opt out because we wanted to see what the rules were in place before. So
right,
we're just
right.
Walking in blindly.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that was a similar tactic that a lot of municipalities took. You know, it was really an unknown and to develop an ordinance seemed premature, mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you did, you get this whole grandfathering issue if something changed that you didn't like, so it's rather just to, you know, hold off, see where they are, and then, you know, develop accordingly.
All right.
And I think this session is on public engagement, you know, how to talk to the community about this issue or where it stands, so this is going to be a good one to come and finish. And then we got the appropriation for the Boyne City to Boyne Falls Trail.
Yeah.
It is going to bid in July, and the bids will be let in August. So as long as they come in within 5% of the estimate, the project will move forward, and hopefully this fall, and then late in the spring.
Is there any time frame on the bike trail to Charlevoix, the completion of that, or it just ends where it ends?
You mean bring it in from where it ends into the city?
No, where it ends going to Charlevoix.
I'm not quite sure where they're at with that. I thought the next phase was moving forward, but
yeah, I thought it was too, and I hadn't seen any. So.
It got bumped back, and you know the county is. That, but it got bumped back just like ours got bumped back. It's just the federal appropriations, the state appropriations are just slow moving the cogs. But that from Boyne into Horton Bay is 2021 scheduled.
Okay.
Yeah. I do have just a question about the Boyne Ball, Boyne City. Does that mean they got all the property owners in line?
All the necessary easements have been obtained.
Okay.
Anything else?
That's all I got.
Good to the order.
sewer improvement for the mountain.
Well, wait. You want people up there?
Pub pressure.
Just need a really big pump.
Anything else? Any motion for the chairman?
Sorry.
Motion second, all those in favor?